Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The situation in Gaza right now is desperate. A large percentage of the population is experiencing hunger or even dying of starvation.
What we are seeing every day in Gaza is devastating. Yes. We have seen reports of families eating leaves or animal feed, women giving birth to malnourished babies with little or no medical care, and children dying from malnutrition and dehydration.
Videos show people using birdseed to bake bread, or giving newborn babies dates to suck on because their mothers can't provide enough milk.
As of a report in December and January, 9 in 10 children under 2 and more than 9 in 10 pregnant and breastfeeding women were consuming 2 food groups a day or less. And nearly 2/3 of households were eating just one meal a day.
Of course, hunger isn't limited to Gaza. Millions of people are affected by hunger, especially in Somalia, Afghanistan, and Sudan.
While famine causes severe effects immediately, it can also affect people's health years down the road, and possibly even the health of their children and grandchildren. Science journalist Amanda Ruggieri wrote about this in an online news story for Scientific American, and today we're going to break down what that means. I'm Tanya Lewis, Senior Editor for Health and Medicine at Scientific American.
And I'm Talika Bose, Senior Multimedia Editor.
And you're listening to Scientific American's Science Quickly podcast. Gaza has a population of more than 2 million people. And right now, many of them are facing hunger and some are dying, including children.
Yeah, there's a viral photo and story going around about Yazan al-Kafarna, a 10-year-old boy with cerebral palsy who died of acute malnutrition. The photos, some taken by his father, are shocking.
Yeah, those images are really hard to look at.
They are. I'm going to note that some children with cerebral palsy have dysphagia. That's a condition where it's difficult to swallow food. The food that Yazan normally ate, blended fruit and milk, were no longer available at the time, which exacerbated his condition. Ultimately, this led to him passing away.
That just shows how hard this situation is for children with special needs. But I want to be clear that it's not just sick children who are facing malnutrition. Reuters and other outlets have reported that hospitals in Gaza are grappling with an influx of malnourished children, including toddlers. One report found that 1 in 6 babies and toddlers in northern Gaza are acutely malnourished. Of course, as you mentioned, chronic hunger is a problem not just in Gaza, but for millions of people around the world.
Absolutely.
So one of our contributors, Amanda Ruggieri, has done some really powerful reporting on how starvation affects people's health even years later, and possibly even that of their descendants.
I was really, really curious about this reporting, Tanya, and I guess, like, I would love if you could break that down for me. Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, so in the short term, we know that starvation and malnutrition can obviously be life-threatening.
Okay, so Another question. What's the difference between starvation and malnutrition? Because I've actually seen this used interchangeably online.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So starvation is literally not getting enough food, whereas malnutrition is not getting an adequate amount of specific nutrients.
Okay.
So malnutrition could include starvation, but it can also include having an imbalance of different food groups. And malnourished children can also experience a number of different health problems, such as wasting and stunted growth.
Okay. Are these effects permanent? And also, what is the difference between stunting and wasting?
So wasting is basically an acute form of malnutrition where your muscle and your fat is wasting away. But if it happens for a longer period of time, you can have stunting, which is a more chronic form of malnutrition.
Okay, so stunting isn't reversible?
So it depends on the severity of malnutrition, but generally, yes, stunting is not reversible. And malnutrition can also have life-threatening complications such as severe anemia, diarrhea, or even sepsis.
That's incredibly sobering. I mean, I also want to know about down the road. Can that also cause problems later on in life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So even after children return to normal nutrition, they continue to show health issues like months or years later. And that can include heart disease, high blood pressure, and metabolic disease.
So even people who were exposed to famine before birth can be affected, right? I mean, there was something I was reading about called the Dutch hunger winter.
Yeah, exactly. So the Dutch hunger winter was a famine that happened in the Netherlands from 1944 to 1945 during German occupation in World War II. So there was actually a big study in 1976 of 300,000 men who were born during that time. And the study found that individuals who were exposed to hunger during the first half of pregnancy while they were in the womb were more likely to be obese as adults than those who were not exposed to hunger or
wow.
to those who were even exposed later on in pregnancy.
So being exposed to hunger as a developing fetus actually made people more likely to be overweight?
Yeah, especially during that early period of pregnancy or development. It's kind of counterintuitive, but basically that very early life experience of food scarcity kind of programmed their bodies to hold on to, you know, calories. And other studies have found that men who were in the womb during that famine were also more likely to develop heart disease and not live as long as those who were born soon afterward.
Okay, so like what do scientists think could be responsible for those long-lasting effects though?
Epigenetics.
Break that down for people that don't know. What is epigenetics?
Yeah, so basically it's the set of processes that can turn parts of the genome on or off.
Mm.
And this normally happens through something called DNA methylation.
Which is?
Where you have these chemical groups called methyl groups and they get attached to the DNA and it turns certain genes on or off. So studies of the Dutch hunger winter actually show that people who were exposed to famine during gestation had differences in DNA methylation 60 years later.
Wow.
Compared with siblings who were born later on. Some research suggests the famine might actually affect future offspring as well. So studies of the Great Chinese Famine, which occurred from 1959 to 1961 under Mao Zedong's communist regime and killed tens of millions of people, found that children of people who were exposed to that famine were more likely to have high blood sugar, obesity, and cognitive difficulties.
Okay, this is fascinating. So I've been actually really interested in this for a long time, and I love how you broke this down. But funny story, I am getting tested for diabetes soon because I'm Bengali. And some academics have actually posited that like the famines, due to policies imposed by the British Raj, led to something called the starvation gene. So it's this idea that your body is more likely to hold on to fat. So, you know, it's still being discussed and, you know, maybe even contested, but we do know that South Asians, specifically Bengalis, have a higher risk of diabetes, cardiac disease, and other metabolic conditions.
Huh. Wow. That's really fascinating and awful, but
yeah.
Like, I didn't know that. Yeah. So actually, some research has even hinted that the effects of being exposed to hunger could actually affect the third generation, the so-called grandchild effect. But this is where it gets a little hairy because epigenetic marks are supposed to be wiped out every generation, and it's not totally clear how the changes would be passed down.
So you're saying like the markers get wiped every generation?
Yeah, but it's possible that, you know, any epigenetic changes in subsequent generations could simply be due to the fact that, you know, if you have a female baby who is exposed to famine in the womb, her ovaries and eggs would also be exposed. So her own babies would eventually have similar impacts.
Okay, so does that mean that would be passed down through the maternal line? Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
So according to these researchers, but other researchers actually disagree. And so there's still kind of a lot of contention about whether epigenetic markers are being fully wiped out, not to get too much into the weeds.
I mean, that's really, really interesting, though, because I guess we don't fully know at this point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's still sort of open for debate. That's just something that I think future research will have to investigate.
Of course. I mean, speaking of that, like right now, I know researchers are saying it's going to be difficult to track the full intergenerational effects of famine, like specifically in Gaza.
Absolutely. So as Arya Stein, a professor of global health and epidemiology at Emory University, put it, with famine, you get social breakdowns. So it gets incredibly difficult to maintain the records to identify who was exposed. Science Quickly is produced by Jeff Delvisio, Tulika Bose, and Timmy Broderick. Our show is edited by Ella Fetter and Alexa Lim. Our theme music was composed by Dominic Smith.
Don't forget to subscribe to Science Quickly wherever you get your podcasts. For more in-depth science news and features, go to scientificamerican.com. And if you like the show, give us a rating or review.
For Scientific American's Science Quickly, I'm Tanya Lewis.
And I'm Tulika Bose. See you next time.